We'll call the meeting to order of the Capital Investment Finance Division. And today, we are going to have a presentation of the Omnibus Capital Investment Finance Bill. This is a presentation only today. Tomorrow, we will have a vote on passage on in our regular committee at regular time at 2:45 in the basement hearing room. And at that point, if anyone has any amendments, you have to make sure that you get them to the committee administrator or the committee legislative assistant by 10 a.m. So today we have Representative Hausman to your bill.
And Madam Chair, I would move House File 855.
Representative Hausman moves House File 855, and I
would further move the delete everything A090294.
So Representative Hausman moves the delete everything amendment A090294. Does anyone have any questions about that amendment? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Hausman to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We are taking a look at this bonding bill at a time when unemployment is at 8%, highest in more than a quarter of a century, and further massive job losses are expected in the next few months. And so one of the things that this bonding bill does is focus its funding on both paintbrush and shovel-ready projects that can be undertaken immediately and are labor-intensive. Examples, corrections, human services, veterans affairs, all told us about their critical building needs. We heard about the need for replaced and repaired roofs, tuck pointing, lighting, painting, plumbing, and mechanical and electrical system work. In your packets, you have the HEPR list for both the University of Minnesota and MinSU campuses in front of you, so you can see that these dollars will be dispersed across the state. You can see precisely where and how they will be used. And we know these projects will get roofers and painters and pipe fitters and electricians and those who work on HVAC systems off the bench quickly. The bill was written to ensure that we leverage all federal stimulus dollars and any other federally authorized funding. You will notice the words, the commissioner must allocate money appropriated in this section so as to maximize the use of all available federal money from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009 and any other federal funding. You will see those words used repeatedly in this bill. One of the goals of this bill is to help offset job losses and break the state's downward economic spiral. The outcomes, though, after all of that is built, is we believe infrastructure that's in place that builds a healthy economy on into the future. Now, as audience members are looking at what is in this bill, we should talk about what is not in the bill. Most notably is the absence of what we have always referred to in the past as local projects, those that come from specific municipalities. You perhaps know that in the House, we had very, very careful consideration of how we balance our budget sustainably into the future. And the bonding bill is not separate from that. The bonding bill is part of that. We have a target to that bill just as we do all of the others. And so the bonding target for our bill was $200 million. If you go to page 4 of the spreadsheet, you will see the total GO bonding is exactly $200 million in our bill. And quite frankly, the biggest challenge, the easiest thing in the world is to write a big bill. The greater challenge is writing one that is smaller because you still have to look at it from a statewide perspective and you still have to be fair and while you're staying within the $200 million target. So, as I indicated, that segment that we often refer to as local projects, even though some were shovel-ready and very worthy, are not in the bill. I did feel very keenly that the results of the last couple of years are being felt this year. 2007, as nearly as we were able to determine, we checked back for the last 20 years to 1988, and it appeared that the only time an entire bonding bill was vetoed was 2007. There were several transportation bills with trunk highway bonds that were vetoed, but as nearly as we could tell, 2007 was the only time when an entire bonding bill was vetoed, and then, of course, in 2008, line item vetoes some. So in some areas, we are trying to do some catch-up. The $200 million was not my target. It was arrived at jointly in context of the budget. I would have happily written a $500 million bill. I want to specifically talk about how our investment is noticed in some segments. In the December 2008 Twin Cities Business, there is an article titled Building Higher Education. And the subtitle says, construction in most sectors has tanked, but on Minnesota college campuses, building is booming. And if you go to the last paragraph of that article, they say, the factor enabling all of this construction is, of course, money. Sources on the college side and the building industry side agree that the real drivers behind the continuing strength of Minnesota's higher ed market are a state legislature and private donors who take seriously the idea that quality education is the key to the state's future economic well-being and its ability to compete in a global market. And so this time, as others, we begin with the higher ed portion of the bill, and it is always a very significant part of the bill. If you would take the spreadsheet, we'll just briefly go through that. I'd like to just talk briefly about one thing that you see under the University of Minnesota. This will be on the campus of the University of Minnesota Morris and or the main campus. I'm told that to keep costs low, that they may use some existing infrastructure on the Twin Cities campus, but at any rate, we think of it as the University of Minnesota Morris because that is the campus that has excelled in the area of renewable energy. They're soon to be the first carbon neutral campus. I'd like to just give you a little bit of a sense of what our motivation for this was. There is a Florida laboratory that does this work, but it turns out that only solar thermal water heating panels are tested in Florida. So when a gentleman who wrote this letter to us checked with them, he was informed that since our collectors are based on heating air, not water, they had to be sent to an associated laboratory in Canada. So he sent them off to Canada, and 18 months later, the collectors still hadn't even been tested, and there seemed to be little hope that it would be anytime soon, as the Canadian testing facility had been closed for an indefinite period of time. His point is, Minnesota has an opportunity to attract a tremendous amount of development in the renewable sector through the creation of a testing facility such as this. With the capacity to test both solar thermal and solar electric panels, Minnesota can easily position itself as a continuing leader in the renewable sector. And what he suggests is there are dozens of thermal companies in the U.S. who are waiting for a facility just like this. And so that is an item under the University of Minnesota. I do have to say that there's one thing that's not there. And sometimes when we don't put in our most local projects, they are most painful for those of us who have to write the bill. And what is not in the bill is the Bell Museum. And this actually drew the attention on the Senate floor, an amendment where they tried to take it out. And members, if you permit me, I just have to tell you, I have law from February 1872. That's when we, the legislature, established this. And it says, it shall be the duty of the Board of Regents of the University of Minnesota to cause to be begun as soon as may be practicable and to carry on a thorough geological and natural history survey of the state. And they talked about the duty of the Board of Regents to be this, among many, to be preserved for public inspection free of cost in the University of Minnesota in rooms convenient of access and properly warmed, lighted, ventilated, and in charge of a proper scientific curator. and that there will be exchanges with other state universities and scientific institutions. As sometimes happens, when word gets out that a project might not be in, you start getting lobbied, and I got a phone call from Ford Bell, who happens now to be in Washington, D.C., on Sunday, saying he heard it wasn't in the bill, and he thought he needed to tell me how important this was. And at the time, he said that the president had had a very good conversation with the governor and that they thought this would be signed this year. So, to be absolutely sure, I had my conversation on Friday with the people as closest to the governor as I could get. And I was told that they believed this is duplicative of what the Apple Valley Zoo and the Science Museum are doing. So you see how much work we still have to do on some of these issues to get the point of mission across to those who are very, very crucial to this process. MNSCU, there are five vetoed projects that reappear here. When MNSCU was before us, we asked the question about their board's position, and their board has taken a vote. There is a commitment that's reaffirmed by the MNSCU board, and I believe it is in your packet. We have a schedule. You may remember that we've pushed MNSCU a little bit. How fast can you get these done? And they have given us an up-to-date schedule for how quickly they could get these projects ready. They are shovel-ready. The system-wide classroom renovation is in Brainerd, Wadena, Moorhead, Peace River Falls, Pine City, Pipestone, and Rochester. The Red Light High School and Middle School is now phase four. That's that particular amount. Under DNR, we have a small amount for flood hazard mitigation grants. And I can tell you, we have on our committee Representative Lanning, who I know will be very clear to us about needs. I was visited by Dave Olin, who represents the Roseau area, and just today by Paul Marquardt, who represents Clay County. And what I said to them was, I do believe that this particular crisis will be dealt with in the same way that we did the Southeast Minnesota flood. And that is, we need to gather some information. We need to know what is the damage to that entire area. And of course, they haven't even passed through the crisis yet, so knowing the damage is probably not possible now. So we will carefully look to see what is the damage, particularly to public infrastructure, because that's what we would be limited to. And then we determine how much federal money is going to arrive. Hopefully that will happen very quickly. And I absolutely believe that when we have that information, the governor and the legislature, just as they did for the Southeast Minnesota flood, will come together with a special bill responding to the flood, the crisis in the Red River Valley. And so we'll obviously see whether our committee has a role in that, but I do believe that gathering information will take a little bit of time, but that we will respond to the great needs in that part of the state.
Representative Lanning.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's important to point out that there are different issues here. Obviously, there are going to be huge recovery costs that to repair damaged property, public infrastructure, and all the rest. but what I'm concerned about in this bill are items that that are flood mitigation projects that will help us pull back the floodwaters in the future. And that's very different than recovering the costs and damage that's been done. In order for us to avoid future costs, repairs having to be made, we need to make sure that we're doing a lot of flood mitigation projects to avoid future damage. And so we definitely will be coming forward with a request for helping us recover from all the damage that's been done. But we need to make sure that people understand that the flood mitigation part of this, which is typically a lump sum for DNR that goes to a lot of different flood mitigation projects, that's a whole other matter. And we need to be funding that in the bonding process. And we don't expect this committee to be front and center on whatever recovery for damages that we're looking at, but rather this committee ought to be dealing with what can we do to prevent future flooding.
And I can tell you, Madam Chair and members, the Senate at a $329 million bill has $26 million in it. Should we be so fortunate as to negotiate a higher bill, I can tell you that I don't think we would get any argument from this committee. I'll tell you where the number we have. If you heard in my explanation, our first priority was always to find out what is that federal money that we just absolutely have to maximize. And so the amount we have, we asked Mr. Lacassmo for that number. He said that number is somewhat elusive. We don't know what the stimulus numbers are yet, and the next federal budget is due in October. However, the 12.4 to 12.7 number is what would keep the federal projects moving forward, and there would be no delays because of lack of state funds. And then he talked about a $1.2 million for Ada, $3.5 for Breckenridge, $7.7 for Roseau, and that is bare minimum. What that does is match, to just make certain that we keep federal projects moving forward and that there are no delays. So if we are fortunate, if you all help get a larger target in Conference Committee, clearly almost every item that we have in this bill is smaller than the Senate just because of the size of the bill. The RIM reserve is also to capture federal dollars, not a great deal. There's more there, but we obviously didn't have very much money to put in there. Rural Finance Authority, we have that is not GO bonds, and that comes from Representative Junkie's committee, and he can respond to questions if you have any. Under the Department of Transportation, you have a list. Local bridges on the waiting list, and Representative Leader, as usual, went through the entire list of bridges and identified 61 of the most crucial in terms of the point score as they evaluate those. So for $11 million, we can accomplish the 61 most needed bridge improvements. The Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program is not in the Senate bill, so this was important for us to get into Conference Committee. Some of you are very familiar with the Minnesota Valley Railroad Track Rehabilitation, a slow train that moves lots of commodities and that needs improvements, and the port development. Let me say just a little bit about both the commuter and passenger rail corridor under MnDOT and the transit corridors. It is written differently. If you're on the Transportation Committee, you know that there's been a proliferation of individual corridor bills. The list has gotten quite long. And the dilemma begins to be, is our language precise? Do we fund actually what's needed for that corridor this particular year? And what is the dollar amount? And so what we have done in this bill is an amount of money, in the case of MnDOT, $7.5 million for commuter and passenger rail corridors program, and for the Metropolitan Council, $21 million. And they do two things. They maximize federal money, they maximize federal stimulus dollars, and they implement their plan. The Met Council, if you are interested, we have maps that show every corridor you're interested in. Anyone we would have put in is on this map and a transportation policy plan. You may have heard discussion about this on the floor. People are always hoping it isn't individual corridors, that they all make sense together. And the language in the bill says even MnDOT and Met Council have to work together to make certain that those corridors all across the state and as they move across the metro area make sense. Under the Department of Human Services, the Moose Lake expansion, I believe you have this in your packet. One of the motivations to do this now when we're struggling with an operations budget is the very fact of doing this project brings down the per diem. So you see their schedule, 08, 09, July of 2009, when phase one is full and when phase two is full. And you see when we finally get to phase two being full, we go from 368, 348, 315, 285, and finally to 250. And at that level, we are below Wisconsin. And that becomes the motivation in difficult economic times to move more quickly on this particular program, since it has an effect on our operating budget as well. I think under Tim Mahoney is here. I think I would just ask Representative Mahoney, under D, the redevelopment grant program, it looks like a small amount of money, but I thought there is such good news in terms of investment coming to Minnesota that if you wouldn't mind, Representative Mahoney, give us some sense of a couple of projects that literally are ready to go and bring significant investment into the state.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I always thought there was going to be another zero on that number. But there are five projects that this $700,000 gets us pretty close to funding fully. There are five projects. Department of Employment and Economic Development still has to sign off on all of them at this particular point, so there's no earmarking here whatsoever. We're asking professionals to evaluate them and run through them. Mankato, Moorhead, Rochester, Pine Island, and Minnetonka. And this gets about 90% of the funding that's needed for them, and if they're good projects, somebody will come up with the other 10%.
Representative Hausman. And I realize I skipped over Veterans Affairs, the asset preservation specifically geared to the Minneapolis building and the Hastings building. And I'm sure you have heard us talk about the mental health facility. Veterans today coming back with more head injuries and mental illness than perhaps has been in the past. And if you were part of this committee when we took our tour two summers ago, it was one of the most moving presentations as the physician there talked about their goal, which is to take a look at each individual and say, what is the injury here? What is the assessment here? And how can we bring that person back to fully functioning in the community? Not just assuming that that we're somehow going to have a home somewhere. This is actually for the purpose of identifying and having as a goal bringing the person back to full functioning. I'm going to just briefly highlight a little bit of the language. So if you have the language before you. On page two, that's the National Solar Testing and Certification Laboratory to test, rate, and certify the performance of equipment and devices that utilize solar energy for heating and cooling air and water and for generating electricity. On page three, there are four requests that NIMSCU made for changes. This is not these are not new dollars. Language change. One has to do with Minnesota State College, the Southeast Technical Aviation Training Center. On page 27, you'll know similar language for Hennepin Technical. For Owatonna, there's a land purchase that, if you look at page 27, that we get some language that will be helpful for them. And then St. Cloud State. Again, they don't affect the cost of the project. On page 12, again, you see this phrase, so as to maximize the use of all available federal funding, and you see on lines 10 to 18 some of the campuses and purposes for this part of the military affairs budget. You see Hastings, Hutchinson, Red Wing, Winona, Bemidji, Brainerd, Duluth, Invergrove Heights, Jackson, Northeast Minneapolis, Rosemont, and St. Peter. Again, needs across the state. On page 15, you see something similar. You see the designation for the Minneapolis Veterans Home and the Hastings Veterans Home. We heard Representative Morrow's bill on Minnesota First Bonds, and we have put that into the bill. We don't know whether this will be any more useful than the one that Representative Carlson remembered doing some time ago, but the Commissioner of Finance may establish the Minnesota First Bond Program to encourage individuals to invest in state general obligation bonds. And we have a long discussion about the issue of sale of public libraries. I think that we spent several meetings on that, and we do have some language. It is very tightly drawn that the owner of the public library may sell the property. The net proceeds must be applied as follows: first to pay the state, etc. And after they have met those requirements, the property is no longer state bond financed property. But that obviously is something that where we spent a lot of time just discussing the specific language and what's appropriate. There is a bill that introduces on pages 22 and 23 the powers that MnDOT has to, in fact, seek federal funding and to carry out a state rail plan and then to plan for passenger and commuter rail. And because we have some of that bonding language in there, and I don't know how that other bill will move, I thought it might be important for us to include that language here, that the plan must identify corridors, planning design, our government functions, they serve a public purpose, the commissioner may apply for funding from federal, state, regional, local, and then the commissioner's powers. I think that's it. But that just goes along with their writing a state rail plan and having the power to plan and seek federal funding for passenger and commuter rail outside the Seven County metro area. There are two projects where we extended the deadline, and one of those is the Minnesota Planetarium, and the other is Worthington, the Campbell Soup property. Both of them are extended to December 31, 2012. The reason we didn't say extended until they, or that it's available until extended, is Ms. Zewers tells me it doesn't necessarily come at no cost, so we had to choose a date where we could say extending that deadline does not affect the cost of the project. There are minor language changes for a Greater Minnesota Business Development Grant Program, minor changes for Historic Fort Snelling Visitor Center, and then the remainder of the language relative to passenger rail report. And I believe all of that language was run by the department, as I understand. Didn't have a chance to check that before, but I believe that was jointly drafted. So very quickly, that, Madam Chair, that's the spreadsheet and the language.
And are there questions from members? As I said before, today is just for presentation. Tomorrow at our regular time, we would be voting on the bill. And so if there's any questions, we can take that. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hausman, maybe I missed this, but on the new N Natural Resources kind of version of HEPR, that doesn't apply to this bill, but it's setting up the policy for future years' bills, that new concept. Is that correct?
I'm looking at the research person, and I think the answer is yes.
Yes, the answer is yes. The researcher is nodding her head. Any other questions from members on the presentation of the bill?
And Madam Chair, I think we were suggesting a time that if there are amendments for tomorrow, that we would have some time to copy and put in.
Yes, the request is that tomorrow at 2:45 would be our regular hearing time, and that will be in the basement hearing room. And then we're requesting that the amendments go to Jenny Nash or to Lori Nissel by 10 a.m. so that there's proper time left for copying and distribution. And if there's Representative Hausman.
Madam Chair, just in summary, I will say I know there are many very disappointed people, and I am one of them. Lots of my veto projects from last year are not in this bill, and it probably comes as a surprise to many of the people I represent, but a $200 million bill done fairly for the entire state is not easy to arrive at.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, I appreciate the work that you've done on this and within the targets that you were given, and I appreciate very much the discussion that you had on maximizing the federal monies and the federal stimulus. And so I would like your assurance, and I fully expect it, that as you go forth into conference committee, that projects that aren't in here but do have federal money attached to them and federal stimulus will be at the top of your priority list continually.
I do think that idea of Madam Chair and Representative Murphy maximizing federal dollars, on this fairness thing, I sort of had to say no to whole segments, and so you may notice that I have freight rail and passenger rail, but I don't have airports. And that is, I think the Senate has four airports, and so though it would have been tempting to say yes to one airport, it's difficult, again, when you see the expectations that a number of people have. But there is at least one that has quite significant, and I think that's relatively recent information, that has quite significant federal money, and I do think in conference committee that would be a principle that we ought to be looking at.
And as you stated, Chair Hausman, this is one step in the process. This is the House step. The Senate has produced their bill first. So we go from there. And any further questions from members of the committee?
And I would say, Madam Chair, that there are probably at least three approaches to the next stage, and members of the audience and members around this table could absolutely help in making the case for the importance of a significant bonding bill that, in fact, puts people to work, and at the end of that process adds infrastructure that builds us to a healthy future. So we probably need lots of partners in this next stage.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Hausman. The other thing we have to do is move the minutes. Anybody want to move the minutes? Mary Murphy, Representative Murphy, moves minutes from the March 19th, 2009. All those in favor, any comments? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails. If no further business, meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chair.